My name is Nick Ross. I'm the Outreach Coordinator here at the Sudbury Symphony, and I'm here today to welcome you to the Sudbury Symphony's March 2nd concert, Romantic Journey. Jamie Arrowsmith is here with me today. He's the rehearsal conductor at Sudbury Symphony Orchestra. Romantic Journey is the title of this particular program. So how is this a romantic journey?
Well, I mean, if you take the title of the program, A Romantic Journey, you can imagine quite a bit that would fit within that title. For me, this title of the program, this idea of going on a journey together, it doesn't just refer to the music. I mean, we have the element of, you know, the music taking us on a journey from beginning to end within a particular piece, and we have the, you know, the background stories of these composers who have gone, in some cases, on physical journeys, which prompted them to write this music, but also, you know, on personal journeys as well, and emotional and professional journeys. But I think even more importantly, the journey that's being talked about here has to do with us as a community, and in particular as a symphony as well, because this symphony has gone on a remarkable journey during the tenure of our music director, Victor Sawa, who is celebrating 15 years this season with the Sudbury Symphony. And in fact, there are members of the orchestra that, in fact, our trombone section, for example, has been together for 20 years, which is an amazing thing. That's very rare in any orchestra. So the kind of journey that we've taken together as musicians and as colleagues is really an exceptional one. So I think that that's something that will, you know, help to tie this program together for the audience as
well. Yeah, that's something we can be really proud of. So our modern Canadian piece by John Astacio is sort of a standout on the program. What's going on here with the John Astacio piece, Frenergy?
Frenergy, right. Well, I think the title of the piece says it all. It's frenetic energy, right? Mm. Now, I mean, energy doesn't necessarily imply a loss of control or this sort of frenetic, you know, running around, because, I mean, in the Brahms, for example, there's definitely an energy about that piece, but it's very well controlled and ordered, and he takes advantage of keeping that stuff together. I think the frenetic aspect comes with the way in which rhythm is played with
rhythmic
in this piece.
Push, yeah.
Yeah, there's a definite rhythmic push, and the whole piece is actually, it's very fast, and it does have this sort of almost uncontrollable energy about it, and especially when you listen very closely to the rhythms that happen in the piece. There are rhythms that sort of cross each other. Mm. You get rhythms that don't fit with each other, but somehow when they're layered together, they work, and it's the way in which these rhythms work together and push each other along, and also the way in which the musicians have to play, in the case of the strings, for example, so quickly. You know, fingers and bows have to move very quickly to achieve some of these figures. So there is that sense of frenetic energy about it, and so I think the title is very apt. But it's also a celebration as well. Mm. It's a celebration of musical form. What we have here is just the continuation of what composers have been doing throughout the Romantic period and up until, you know, the 21st century, which is taking traditional classical forms and pushing the boundaries of them faster, more instruments, more interesting harmony, interesting rhythm, making them all mesh together in a way that sounds almost chaotic, but there is just that little bit of control that keeps it all going together and just pushes it towards the end. Mm-hmm. So I think that's in keeping, at least with the theme of our journey, of going on this romantic journey. We have the continuation of one idea from way back in the beginnings of romantic music being taken all the way to its extreme with this piece. And I think the audience is really going to enjoy it as an opening piece. It really sets the tone for the rest of this program because of its high energy, because of the amount of hard work the musicians have to do on stage to really make these musical ideas come to life.
You mentioned that some of the composers are going on journeys themselves, physical journeys almost. What's an example of this?
I think that a really good example would be this, the Third Symphony by Robert Schumann. That's the last piece on our program, the Rhenish Symphony. Now, Rhenish in the title refers to the Rhineland, that part of Germany through which the Rhine River flows, the Rhine Valley. And at the time that he was conceiving of this piece and writing it, he and his wife Clara Schumann were taking a journey down the Rhine, through the Rhineland. And so you get little bits of Schumann's impressions of nature and of the surrounding countryside and of being out on the land. Mm-hmm. And some of the scenes, you know, some of the villages and some of the activities that are happening get reflected in the music. One really great example is this notion of taking ideas from the land, from the people who live on the land. So folk music. Traditionally, in Romantic music, composers always liked to use folk music because it reflected their nationality, their culture, things like that. And so the folk music that we hear in this symphony is a Ländler, a German folk dance. Okay. And the second movement of the symphony opens with a Ländler. And it's characterized just like our previous concert, our waltz concert, where the waltz was featured. Right. And we talked about the traditional elements of the waltz. A Ländler is also a dance in 3/4 time. But it's characterized not just by the rhythm, but by particular leaps in the melody, di-da-dum, ba-da-di-da-dum, da-da-dum, almost sounds like yodeling. If anyone remembers that scene in The Sound of Music where the two are dancing together and they're dancing to a Ländler, that's the kind of music we're talking about. And Schumann really deftly works this into the opening and into the theme of the second movement of his symphony. The fourth movement of this symphony is meant to depict a ceremony that happens in a church. And what happened was he and his wife went into the cathedral at Cologne and they saw a ceremony at which a bishop was being promoted to the rank of cardinal. And so the music that happened there was very solemn, very processional, very regal. And so he tried to recreate that kind of sound in the fourth movement of the symphony. And he does this very well. And this is where we can link in our community to this music. He features the trombone section in the fourth movement of this symphony. We've never heard them before in the piece until this moment. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden they have the most noble, triumphant, regal, and noble sounding part of the music. Mm. And they take command right away. So I think it's really apt that we're celebrating our trombone section through use of this piece.
Speaking before we started today about the unconventional form that are present in a lot of the pieces on this program.
Right. You know, this is a romantic journey, so we're focusing on the romantic composers. And these romantic composers were all after Beethoven, you know, sort of post-revolutionary era in Europe. Beethoven had opened the gates for the composers to do all sorts of new and interesting things with music. So you see composers like Schumann, like Brahms, taking advantage of bigger orchestral forces, bigger sound, more instruments, differing instruments, and making use of those in new and innovative ways. So you get a much thicker, bigger texture and a broader range of sound there to begin with. But also this idea of breaking with tradition, right? Being revolutionary about things. You know, the standard symphony at the time of Schumann was usually four movements. Well, this symphony is five movements, and so that in itself is a break with tradition. The fourth movement goes straight into the fifth movement as well. So there's not that traditional break between the movements there. Another very good example of this would be the other piece on the program featuring our cellist, Erica Nielsen. Mm-hmm. And this would be the Saint-Saëns Cello Concerto, the first cello concerto. And what is perhaps unique, or at least unusual, about this piece is that instead of starting with a traditional long orchestral introduction before the soloist gets to begin playing, the soloist starts right off with a bang from the very beginning of the piece. The orchestra plays one note, and then the soloist is off to the races. And that's a very unusual thing for a concerto, just to start that the focus on the soloist right away instead of working the audience up to it.
With an introduction,
absolutely. And this piece, it's cyclic. It doesn't have breaks in between the movements, again, like I was describing with the symphony. There are no breaks between any of the three movements, which is, again, an unusual thing to happen with a concerto. Yeah. So in one sense, it's tough on the soloist. They don't get a chance to take a break between movements. And there are some parts of this music that are very, very challenging. And that's maybe the last, maybe important thing to listen for from an audience perspective, which is romantic composers are pushing the boundaries, pushing what's possible with music, and with the technique of the soloist as well, and the instrument itself.
So we have a romantic journey, but we also have ceremony as well as part of this program.
Right.
There would be another ceremony of sorts too with the Brahms Academic Festival Overture.
Right. Now this is very interesting. Brahms was granted an honorary doctorate by a university in Germany, and sort of as a way of paying them back for their kindness and for thinking of him and giving him this honor, he wrote them a piece. He wrote them the Academic Festival Overture. Mm-hmm. And on the surface, the music seems to be quite, you know, there's a lot of pomp in this music. There's a lot of, again, ceremony, this idea of ceremony, and it's brought to life through this sort of sometimes boisterous, sometimes very solemn piece. However, there's an undercurrent in this music, which maybe not a lot of people aren't aware of, and which Brahms really, really skillfully worked into the music, and that is that most of the tunes that you hear, most of the melodies that you'll hear, are actually student drinking songs from the 1800s in Germany.
Okay.
So it's really interesting that Brahms took this idea, which was supposed to be a very, very ceremonial thing, and then made it very tongue-in-cheek by working in these student, you know, drinking songs. And I think that tells you a little bit about student culture and how that hasn't changed much since those days either.
Ceremony tying a lot of these things together, but also these romantic ideas, this romantic journey. Erica Nielsen playing the Saint-Saëns Cello Concerto. We have an energetic Canadian piece, wonderful romantic music by Brahms and Schumann. I invite you to join the Sudbury Symphony on March 2nd, 8 p.m. at Glad Tidings for a romantic journey.